I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen up, you
Politics, politics, humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hello, hello. My name is Bart. Welcome to Bart Cop Radio, show number 100. Who'd believe it? But yeah, it took us 4 or 5 years to make 100 shows, but here we are, 100 shows. And after all that time, I still think I got no business behind the microphone. But, you know, I have these weird thoughts, and I can't find anyone else to say them, so I had to say them myself. Let me see what we got on the big, big program today. We got lots of bush smacking in this episode. Got a little thing on the filibuster you might like. Got a personal story that hopefully you'll find a little humor in. We're going to recap the 08 race. Going to make some people happy, going to make some people mad. Old friend Tommy Mack is going to join us for a little discussion on this and that. Got a bunch of stories here, got a bunch of stories there, some fun cartoons, some jokes, some little funny stories, little Jon Stewart, little Saturday Night Live, little this and that. But as always, got to start it off with a shot of Chinako. Because as you know, the shows that start out with a shot of Chinako are real good, and the ones that don't start out with a shot of Chinako are no good at all, which is why I charge my Chinako habit to my IRS account. Oh, I hope they understand when it comes time for the big, big audit. All right, let's do this. Oh, that's very, very nice. Very, very nice. That shot was provided by Ann in Philly. Thank you, Ann. That was very nice. What else we got to do? Well, hell, the show's so big, so jam-packed. Don't know if it's going to fit on two CDs or not, so let's get right into it. One, two, three, bam!
This is www.bartcop.com.
Issue 1, Amman Summit.
The Prime Minister is dealing with sectarian violence. The Prime Minister is having to deal with Al-Qaeda. The Prime Minister is having to deal with criminal elements.
Yeah, he's also got to deal with being invaded by a hyper-aggressive American idiot who ordered 5,000-pound bombs dropped on his city day after day, night after night, until the people went crazy. He's got to deal with that. He's got 130,000 invaders that are in his country to steal their assets. He's got to deal with that. Poor bastard, yeah, he's got his hands full. He's got George Bush to worry about.
Part of the Prime Minister's frustration is that he doesn't have the tools necessary to take care of those who break the law.
I have a question. Why can't you buy any tools for $2 billion a week? $2 billion a week, 52 weeks a year, $100 billion a year. We've been there 3 years, $300 billion. Can't buy any security? Jesus, almost like we got an idiot in charge over there.
Maliki's government continues to fragment. With President Bush at his side, the Prime Minister pointed to the scale of his challenge.
We're dealing with building a whole state in all its aspects, political, economic, security, militarily.
President Bush says he wants Iraq to pull through, and he's on a listening tour to gather data to help Maliki and Iraq.
I want to hear all advice before I make my decisions about adjustments to our strategy and tactics in Iraq to help this government succeed. And that's why this business about graceful exit just simply has no realism to it at all.
Why would the monkey even say something that stupid? There's no chance we're going to get out of this with any grace at all? You know, Bush, it's like he drunkenly shot his way into a bank and he killed a couple of clerks and a couple of hostages. And now the place is surrounded and he's probably got a bullet in him too. And the whole bank building, the whole block surrounded by cops. And he's willing to entertain suggestions on how we might gracefully get out of the bank. Well, hey, dumbass, you shot your way into a bank. You own the bank now. It's yours. Don't look to someone else and say, how are you going to get us out of this? You got us into it. It's up to you. If you can't find a way out, admit it, resign, and we'll get someone that does your job a little bit better.
Question. Next Wednesday, the Iraq Study Group delivers its report. Members of the group, Republicans, Baker, Eagleburger, Meese, O'Connor, Simpson. Democrats, Hamilton, Jordan, Panetta, Robb, Perry.
Geez, John, could you scream through that list a little faster? I almost caught some of those names. Let's slow down a little bit and take a look. Okay, we got James Baker, the consigliere for the biggest crime family on the planet. If you want something done illegal, if you need some bodies buried, if you need an emperor overthrown, if you need a government to fall, if you need a plane to come crashing out of the sky, you call Uncle Jimmy, and he takes care of it. Good thing we had someone fair and impartial to run this commission, right? Next up, we got Lee Hamilton, the criminal, the Democrat who's given Bush cover on Iran-Contra, gave Bush cover on 9/11. Now he's trying his best to give him cover here, but there's just no cover to give. Lee Hamilton, king of the whitewashes. And what's this wrong with the Democrats? Every time Bush says, well, we need a thorough investigation, I suggest my old friend Lee again to look into this stuff. Well, yeah, there you go. I'd like that teacher to grade my paper. Oh, that teacher gives me A every time. I'd like to, the one in the red, yeah, her. I want her to grade my paper, yeah, because I always get an A when she grades my paper. And the Democrats just take that. What's wrong with the Democrats? Next up, Sandra Day O'Connor. Yeah, appointed by Reagan, right-wing crazy kook. But you heard that Gore took Florida in 2000. She screamed, oh, no, in front of the whole cocktail party. Later she said, oh, bosh, I didn't say, piffle. You think would I say something like that, little old me? Then we got Lawrence Eagleburger, who's one of the bigger hand jobs. It's hard to be one of the bigger hand jobs in the Republican Party, but he manages it. He's always on CNN. He always has nothing to say but pure horseshit. Sometimes people from the Republican Party can make some sense. This guy's not one of them. Oh, but he makes a lot more sense than the next guy, Ed Meese. Ed Meese, you younger kids probably don't know, but he's just Ashcroft with a different skirt on. He was one of those guys. When Ed Meese got in, he was Reagan's attorney general. And Reagan said, by God, of all the problems in this country, the biggest one we have is pornography. So I want you, Ed Meese, to do a big investigation of pornography. And they came back and they said, well, it's okay. Nothing wrong with pornography. So they said, well, trash that report. Ed Meese is also one of those crazies that will tell you something like, a college student smoking on a joint of marijuana is more dangerous than a machine gun at Times Square noon Tuesday. Yeah, he's one of them Daryl Gates, Law and Order bastards who would just soon shoot a kid with a joint in his hand and let the Kenneth Lays of the world run off with thousands of people's life savings. Yeah, oh, the joint, that's the danger. That's what must be stopped. Ed Meese, the criminal. Next up, Alan Simpson, one of the more sane members of the Republican Party, got to say, got to call it when it's fair, but he's half-crocked. And not only that, he's 75. The ages of this group, 76, 75, 76, 76, 74, 75. Wait, you got to have been born in that 18-month period to even get on this panel? What is there about really old people that makes this panel work? Maybe they're people who don't have a future, so they can come in alive if need be. You know, you get a guy up there 35 years old, get him on the commission, and find out they all covered up the bigger crimes. Well, yeah, now his career's over. He's 35. At least these people, their careers are already over. They got nothing to lose by sticking their neck out. Next up, Vernon Jordan. Don't trust him. Used to trust him. Back when he was Clinton's friend, used to trust him. But in 2000, when we had the debates coming up, they sent Vernon Jordan over to talk with James Baker, the crime family consigliere, for them two to hash out the rules for the debate. And the first thing Baker said was, we're not going to have any talking between the two candidates. And Jordan said, deal! Now, either Jordan sold out Kerry at the time, or Kerry gave Jordan orders, cave in the first time. You know, first chance you get to cave in, take it. Now, it's one of the two. I'll let you decide. Next up, Leon Panetta, probably trust him more than anybody on this list. Don't know much about him, but he's a Clinton fan. I've seen him when he was in big trouble, and I think he's somewhat of a square shooter. But where the hell's he been? Let's hear something from the guy. I haven't seen him on TV. Oh, I saw him one time. He didn't say anything. But if he's got a voice, can we not hear a little bit of it? Funny, the Democrats that know Clinton, they haven't been heard from yet. Funny how that is. Next up, William Perry. He was Clinton's defense secretary. I guess I'd trust him over a Republican. But hell, he's probably a closet Republican himself. Charles Robb. Don't know that I trust him. LBJ's stepson, half-son, son-in-law, what's that called? And he's the one that spent the night with the hooker, playmate. Said he got a back rub. Hey, dude, we'd respect you more if you say, yeah, she blew my brains out. It was great. I'm sorry. I had a weak moment. We could all respect to them, but to say, yeah, I spent the night with the playmate and got a back... I spent the night with the playmate and got a back rub out of the day. I was like, dude, Andrew Sullivan could have got a back rub out of the girl. So anyway, that's a group of hand jobs. Don't trust any of them. If I was going to trust one of them, it might be Leon Panetta. The others all suspect. And the worst ones, again, Baker, Hamilton, Eagle Burger, Mace, they'll do anything for Bush. And as far as I know, Jordan's on the BFEE payroll. Anyone that's going to make a deal to sell out the president, anyone that can make Kerry look like the loser in a debate, how the hell is he even, he should be a suspect in everybody's radar. Vernon Jordan, you lost to it, me, buddy.
Question. Was the Amman summit timed to upstage the recommendations of the Iraq study group? I ask you, Pat Buchanan.
It was not programmed that way, but he used it that way, John. I think what he told Maliki, if you look at what's going on, the American fighting brigades are coming into Baghdad. The president's going to see Hakim, the other Shia leader, very powerful, close to Iran, right at the White House on Monday. Sistani, of course, has been eclipsed by al-Sadr, and he's the problem of Maliki. I think what is happening is the president told the premier of Iraq, take down al-Sadr and discipline him, and the guy told him, I don't have the force. He said, don't worry, we will provide the muscle. I think we're at the preliminaries of an American strike on al-Sadr and his organization.
So let me get this right. Al-Sadr is the most popular guy in the whole country, and we're getting ready to take him out. Good thinking. Good thinking. It's not like they're all mad at us yet. There's still probably 20% that don't hate our effing guts. So let's go ahead and put a bullet to the head of this most popular guy in the country, and then they'll love us for sure. What's wrong with these people? Can't they see we're trying to bring them democracy? If it takes a bullet or a missile or whatever it takes, we're bringing them democracy, goddammit.
Hello.
Look, this week was a soap opera. Looking at these two leaders, it's hard to decide which one of the two is the weakest. The government in Iraq is on the verge of collapse. The notion that this is a unity government is a fiction. And the de facto government in Iraq are these militias. And the biggest militia thug of all is Muqtada al-Sadr. And the notion of taking him out at this stage, when he's the most popular figure in Iraq, would only invite more problems than we already have.
But isn't that what Bush wants? More problems. Because remember now, if they have peace over there, that means reporters are going to be able to drive around the country and talk to people and gather information. And someone might say, why is there no meter on that oil well? Or they might say, where does this pipeline go? And they might say, well, whose oil is in that tanker? Which port is that tanker going to? Who's going to collect the $120 million off that tanker? People might start asking questions. I don't think that's what Bush wants. I think he wants a bunch of people stuck in the hotel, and the only information they can disperse is what they're given by the military. That's perfect. $100 million a day, or whatever it is, $350 million a day. Gee, I think we can hold on to this job for a couple more weeks.
I'll tell you what's going to happen. The Iraq study group is going to smash on the reef of George Bush's defiance.
Might be the truest words ever come out of Pat Buchanan's mouth. That is exactly what I think is going to happen. Bush is not going to say, oh, you're right, we should have done it your way. I'm sorry, where was my head? We weren't thinking correctly. You're right, let's try it that way. That's not going to happen. He's going to say, no, that won't work. I am the divine decider. What I say goes. And since I can't be wrong and you disagree, then you must be wrong. Jesus is on my side. History is on my side. Right is on my side. Democracy is on my side. So if you disagree with me, then you must be all them bad things. You're an evildoer. So how in the world is Bush going to cave in? He can't. He's God's handpicked messenger to save us from the Clinton disaster. He can't turn around. He can't change his mind. He's all in, whatever it takes. As long as it's not his money, his kids, his life, he's all in.
When he says, thanks for the ideas, it'll break apart. People like Meese will go one way. Panetta goes another. I don't know where Baker goes. Bush is going after the Iraq study group. He's going to say thanks. He's subordinating it.
I don't see the Iraq study group breaking up into factions the way Pat does. But yeah, he's certainly going to blow them off. I think they're going to stick together in that they're going to say, if someone has a question, they're going to say, I refer you to the report. That's the quickest way to keep the people together. But that's exactly what Bush is going to do. He's going to say, thanks. I sure do appreciate it. Just like all this week. I don't know when you're hearing this, but all this week, it's a month since the election. Bush says, oh, we need to work together. Doors are open. I'm interested in what you have to say. Yeah, and then when you're done saying, they'll say, well, get the fuck out of my office. I made up my mind already. That's what's going to happen. It's what he's always done. It's what he's done since he was a little kid. He's never been told no. He's never had to compromise. So he's not gonna.
Okay, the Iraq Study Group is said to be calling for all troops out of Iraq by 2008. Assuming that another 1,000 lives of American soldiers would be lost over the upcoming year.
But that's assuming things won't get worse, and you can't do that when you're talking about the Middle East or something Bush has his hands in. Of course it's going to get worse. They're going to figure out how to kill 7 soldiers a day instead of 3.5. It's of course going to get worse. It's worse now than it was last month. It was worse last month than it was in July. Is worse in July than it was in January. It keeps getting worse every month exponentially.
Do we then back into John Kerry's haunting question put to Congress in April 1971 during the Vietnam War?
Because how do you ask a man to be the last man to die in Vietnam? How do you ask a man to be the last man to die for a mistake?
Or how do you ask a man to be the last man to die in Iraq? I ask you one.
Well, that's where we are. And the president is right about only one thing, and that is that it is not realistic to think about a graceful exit from Iraq. The exit is going to be disastrous. It is going to be messy. It is going to be as hectic and destructive as the American exit from Vietnam. We're going to see that whole thing play out again.
I think it's going to be a whole lot worse than anybody else is talking about right now. I don't mean the loss of life necessarily, but I think we're going to get chased out of Iraq, and that's going to look terrible. What's going to happen is when the United States starts drawing down, the attacks are going to increase. I know that doesn't seem possible, but trust me, they're going to. And so as we start packing up, they're going to start firing more and more and more and more rockets and suicide bombs and everything else at it. So they're going to start packing up faster. It's going to be a big, giant clusterfuck. It's going to look terrible, because what you're going to have is the mightiest military in the world is going to get chased out by these 15-year-old hand jobs, and they're going to point to us and say, this is America's mighty military. This is the superpower. We have brought the superpower to its knees. We're making them scurry like cockroaches in the night. They're going to get a tremendous propaganda value out of this, and it's all because Bush has no brains and doesn't know how to pick his battles. He always fought the wrong war. He knew it at the time. He just got greedy. But whatever he set out to do with the military, remember in the 2000 campaign, he kept saying, don't worry, military, help is on the way. Well, if you remember, Clinton never sent a man into battle who didn't come home. So I'm not sure what Bush was rescuing the military from. Bush sent these 3,000 boys to their death for no goddamn reason. And we don't know how many more thousands are going to die before we get out. But as soon as we start pulling out, everything's going to get ratcheted up so much bigger, so much louder, so much worse. And they talk about Vietnam. Well, you know, a big difference is here is there's a lot of cameras in Iraq today. And there's a lot of Iraqis with cameras. And we're going to see a whole lot of footage on that YouTube of American soldiers running. These gangs are going to get braver every day. And as soon as they hear the word pull out, they're going to go crazy and just start bombing everything. And we're going to leave that giant mess over there. All these people that helped us, they're all going to be executed. You know, I saw a thing on the news yesterday, which I don't understand. They found some people that had been Gonzalez'd on the side of the road and said they'd been tortured with a drill, like your dad's got in the garage. But I don't understand. If you hate somebody, I don't mean to give the Nazis any credit here, but the Nazis were efficient in the elimination of whoever they didn't want. As far as I know, the Nazis didn't sit around and think of ways to torture the people they wanted dead. They just found out the most efficient way to do it, and they did that. And the way I understand it, they didn't even use bullets. They, you know, they pushed them in 500 or 300 or something at a time into these giant rooms and then filled it with poison gas because it was cheaper and more efficient that way. I guess less sloppy, too. But if you got millions of people that you want dead, why do you take the time to get out a drill and torture them? Why not just shoot him in the head, be done with it? Go on to the next guy, shoot him in the head, be done with it. Go on to the next guy, shoot. Why take the time to torture these people? I understand you got the shock value. Someone dumps a body at 5th and Main in Baghdad, and he's got holes drilled all through his head. Well, yeah, that's going to be shocking as hell. But the 20th or the 100th or the 1,000th time you've seen that, how shocking is it? Why are they wasting time torturing these people? You know something else? Not that I'm brave. It just seems like a logic factor. You hear these stories about these, say there's 50 men in some building, and these three big trucks pull up. These guys jump out, and they got the uniform on of the Iraqi police, so they figure, oh, these are good guys. And then these guys come in with their machine guns, and I say, okay, you 50 men, get in the truck. I'm going to say, fuck you, shoot me right here. I'll be goddamn if I'm going to get in your truck and have you drive me to some place. You stick a drill in my head for 45 minutes or 2 days or 2 months. I don't know how long they torture a guy. If you're going to shoot me now. It just makes no sense. Who's going to get in a truck with a bunch of hand jobs to be driven away to be tortured? I ain't going to do that. I tell you, hey, you kiss my ass. Shoot me right now. But I'm sorry, we're getting off the subject. It's going to get so much worse. As soon as we start to pull out, they're going to increase everything, and they're going to chase us out. It's going to be terrible. American military is going to suffer their worst defeat ever. In all the 200 and whatever 50 years we've been a nation, this is it. This is the big one. This is going to be the worst military defeat we ever had. We've never, ever been humiliated like we're about to be humiliated because of this idiot monkey. Can't pick his battles. Stupid, drunk, obstinate, won't listen to anybody, spoiled little bastard, knows what he wants, and he wants it right now, and he doesn't care what the generals say, doesn't care what his father say, doesn't care what his father's Secretary of State or Defense Secretary says. He doesn't care about anything. He wanted that oil, he took it, and this is what we got.
And the fact that the president is saying he's not going to withdraw the troops from the battlefield until the mission is completed, he also said he was going to keep Donald Rumsfeld until the last day of his presidency. His words and his actions have no relationship. He has no credibility. And what we are facing now is a choice between a Vietnam-style exit where people are hanging on the helicopter skids on the roof of the green zone, or a more planned and orderly withdrawal. This is about damage control. It is no longer about winning.
Maybe Eleanor is just being polite, but the only way we could have an orderly exit is if the Iraqi army actually does stand up and takes control and gets everybody put in their place, and that's not going to happen. How's that going to happen? I've said it a few times. If the American military can't get peace in Baghdad, how are the locals going to do it? How are you going to train somebody to do what our military can't do? I assume our commanders in the military have been in the army 10, 20, 30 years, if they can't figure this out, how's a new guy? How's some 21-year-old that say, hey, dude, here's a gun. This is the end you put in your mouth. This is the end you shoot with. Here's what you're going to do. Here's how you handcuff a guy. Here's how you search a house. How's that guy going to bring peace when the generals and the colonels and the lieutenants and the majors, when they can't do it?
This is a guy who's determined. He's got his heels dug in. He's not going to run for election. He believes it'll be a debacle if we pull out. He believes he'll be a disgrace in history, and he's not going to do it. He is not irrelevant.
Well, of course he's going to go down in history as the biggest presidential failure ever, the author of the biggest military disaster ever. Of course that's going to happen. That can't be stopped. The only way that could happen is if peace breaks out in the Middle East. Does anyone think that's going to happen? No, it's not. And something else we need to look at. He's talking about, now that we're there, we have to win. We keep hearing again and again, we're there. Let's not talk about how we got there. Let's talk about how to deal with the situation as it is. Well, that gives the next president carte blanche to go in willy-nilly, henny-penny, whenever he wants to. And that's crazy. Of course we need to talk about how we got in there so we can avoid getting in the next one. The big lesson that we forgot, or the Republicans forgot, is that war is a bad, ugly, horrible thing. Before we went into this war, everybody kept saying, have you heard? We're going to war. Yay, we're going to war. Bush is a big hero. He's a war president. He's not going to take any crap from these guys. He's going to go in and show them we mean business. He's John Wayne. He's going to go beat them up like Reagan pretended he was going to. Nobody was talking about the amputees and the deaths and the military funerals and the fact that we don't have enough people to play taps because there's so many funerals and now they have to bring out a little iPod so it'll play taps for them. Oh, gee, I feel good about that. There's so many dead people, so many dead heroes going in Arlington. We don't have enough trumpet players to play taps for them, so we got to go get a recording on a chip and play that at the guy's funeral. Well, he feels good there laying in his grave. The country forgot that war is a bad thing. Bush saw war as a ticket to greatness in his history book, and the fact that he could steal $300 million a day, that's just a little bonus on the side. But, you know, think, everybody listen to this. In our lifetime, we forgot the rule that war is bad. Everybody said, oh, nifty, neato, keen, we're going to war. Oh, boy. The networks loved it. The newspapers loved it. The talk radio Nazis loved it. They all loved it because it was a big story. Someone like CNN, oh boy, viewership's going to go up 20-30%. Let's go to war. Oh, bum, 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 bum. The march to war. Bum, 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 bum. What excitement. Oh, this is going to be great. We're going to war. Now that we're there, it's how the fuck do we get out? How did we get here? What in the world is... Well, you should have thought about that then. You don't step in the hole and break your leg and say, how'd this happen? You avoid stepping in the hole. It's so easy to do. Something else, you know, the liberals have gotten a bad rap about, oh, he's afraid to use the military. And, you know, when you're not afraid to use the military, this is what you got. Clinton slipped into Haiti and he slipped into Bosnia, somehow managed to get nobody killed. I mean, let's not kid ourselves, that was some good luck on his part, but it was also not complete total idiocy. You know, when Bush, they come to Bush and say, well, if we go to war, we're going to have, you know, we may lose 1,000. He says, well, that's the price we're willing to pay. Let's go do it. You know, let's roll. And then 1,000 turns into 2,000 and then 3,000. And even if they decided today to pull out, they can't pull out today. It's going to take months to pull out. So what is it going to be, 4,000 or 5,000? And like Kerry was saying, who's going to be the last guy out? We forgot that war is a bad thing. Clear Channel and Rush Limbaugh and the White House and Fox News, CNN, New York Times. New York Times was among the worst. The New York Times kept saying, Cheney's right. Obviously, they have the WMDs. And then Cheney get up and say, see, even the New York Times, the liberal organ, they know Saddam's got WMDs, so we have to go. They just all multiplied on each other. Now we got this big mess. And I'm going to take one more swipe at these military families. You guys are still being quiet about this. As you remain quiet about this, you're giving up your right to speak out later. I don't understand why you're doing that. Now, if you're a veteran and you got no legs and you're afraid if you raise a ruckus, they'll lose your papers and you can't get health care, that's one thing. But if your son died over there, a son or daughter died over there, and you got a check and you cast a check, well, what are they going to do to you now? Why the hell aren't you on Larry King? Why the hell aren't you standing out at on the biggest intersection in town with a sign saying, my son died in Iraq for no goddamn reason? Why don't you stand out there and wave that sign? Get some people to start honking their horns. Honk your horn if this war is crazy. Honk your horn if my kid died for no reason. In a couple of years, 5, 10, you know, in our lifetimes, we're going to go to war again. And it seems like somebody ought to play them this recording right here and say, dude, why are you going to war? You know, if you go to war against whoever, Iran or Syria, you know, pick a name, you know that you're going to come back with hundreds or thousands of amputees and men with their brains rattled, blinded, the loss of memories, or dead. That's going to happen. Why don't they think about that before they pull the trigger?
He may be in the minority.
He'll be irrelevant to the debate. He won't have a position in the debate, but yes,
the debate
he will leave American soldiers to be shot at for the rest of his term and killed for the rest of his term for no reason.
Lawrence O'Donnell is exactly right. And again, I don't understand why the military doesn't object to that. Why are you going to be happy that Bush volunteered to send your ass over there for no reason and you come back with missing legs or arms or you can't see or you don't recognize your wife and your kids anymore? Why are they happy with that? Why do they tolerate that? I can understand in some level if you're in a war and you're being shot at and the sergeant says, we've got to take that hill, you six jump up and dodge the bullets and charge after the machine gun. I mean, it's on some level, that kind of makes sense because if the hill must be taken, and you can't take the hill without the machine gun being shut down, and if you six rush the machine gun, maybe three of you will survive, and then we can take out the machine gun and therefore take the hill, and therefore, whatever, now we can see the enemy since we're on the hill, et cetera, and we can... Now, that makes a little bit of sense. But to send a guy over to Iraq, they don't want democracy. They don't want our help. What's the last survey? 80% or more say they want America out? Why are we putting a gun to their head and saying, you must take democracy no matter how many Americans it kills? Why are we doing that? That makes no sense. Why don't the soldiers object to that?
Who lost Iraq? Is the buck now assumed to stop with Al-Qaeda? Is Maliki the problem? Are the generals the problem? Are the Iraqis themselves the problem, Pat Buchanan?
Well, look, everybody is looking for scapegoats. You forgot the neoconservatives in there, but let me tell you, you get right down to the end of it, and frankly, while the Democrats went along with it, this is George Bush's war.
It's
Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld's war.
Now, I have to admit, Pat Buchanan is a lot more honest than a whole lot of Republicans, but it pisses me off to hear Pat Buchanan will put blame where blame belongs, but the Democrats won't. To this day, Have you heard a Democrat say, this is Bush's war? This is Bush's war, Cheney's war, Rumsfeld's war, Condi's war, Powell's war? No. They say, oh, America's in the war. No, America didn't do this. Bush did it. And yeah, he tricks some Democrats into going with him by saying Saddam's got this shit and he's ready to launch. We got to take him out right now, right now, right now. But this is all on Bush. But the Democrats won't say that. What's wrong with the Democrats? Now, I'm doing my best, as you can tell. I've been pretty good on the Democrats this show. I'm trying to give them whatever break I can. It's cheaper than cheap. It's free. If they would just say, this is Bush's war. If they would just say, this is all on Bush. It's so easy to do, but they just won't do it. I guess they're trying to be nice, trying to share some responsibility, because maybe they're doing this because if a Democrat were to fuck this up, the Republicans would all stand with him. Yeah, right. No, they would have been screaming Democrats war the first day. But the Democrats just can't figure it out. What's wrong with the Democrats? This is Bush's war. You know it. I know it. Bob Dole knows it. American people know it. Everybody knows it. But the Democrats are afraid to say it. Isn't that disgusting? And the other thing, could someone remind the idiot Democrats that they won the last election? They are still Bush's bitches. They are still Bush's little puppy dog to be whipped and put away. I'm recording this Saturday morning. Friday, the Republicans pushed through another round of tax cuts. Why didn't the Democrats say, don't you dare. If you do this, because we can't stop you for two more weeks, if you do this right now, we're going to screw you to death come January. Do you want to get screwed to death? Then go right ahead and do this. But the bigger the screw up you do right now, the bigger the hammer's going to hit you when it comes January. But they can't figure that out. What's wrong with them? If your opponent's about to get a bunch of power, you might want to jump back and say, hey, let's all be pals here. Let's, but no, they're full steam ahead, ramming this shit through. Why don't the Democrats use the filibuster this week? See, that'd be a good idea. Shut this shit down right now. Let the bastards threaten us with the nuclear option on the filibuster. Let them fucking try. They can't. They're powerless now. Why can't the Democrats do that? Why can't they see where the power is and use the power? They need some Bart Cop in them is what they need. They need them a whole shitload of Bart Cop attitude. But they just can't find it. They're sackless in victory. Maybe you can understand sackless in defeat, but how are they sackless in victory? What is wrong with the Democrats?
Is this George Bush's graceful exit from blame?
This is why I think he's going to go down swinging. He cannot escape responsibility for it.
Here we go again. Pat Buchanan saying the things that the Democrats should say, but they're afraid. To this day, a month after their big victory, they're still afraid to just speak the simple truth. Why is that? Buchanan is also right when he says Bush is going to go down swinging, and what he means is Bush can't give up. There's no behind him. All he can do is move forward. There's no way to... If he says... Yes, it was a mistake. Then all those 3,000 soldiers died for nothing, and he's got to look at himself in the mirror, assuming he has a conscience. But he's unable to face the reality, so all he can do is continue down the wrong path. And thank Koresh, we got someone like Pat Buchanan that will actually call a spade and say what needs to be said. It'd be nice if we could get a Democrat to say that. Why is it up to Pat Buchanan to attack the Republican for screwing up? The biggest military disaster in American history. And since no Democrat will say it, it's up to Pat Buchanan. Could someone explain that to me?
When he said this week that it's Al-Qaeda fomenting all of this violence, I mean, that was an unbelievable statement. Nobody really took it seriously.
So we have a commander-in-chief of the largest military in the world who is delusional, and everybody knows it, and nobody takes him seriously. For years, he's been saying, Al-Qaeda, 9-11, Saddam, Al-Qaeda, Saddam, 9-11, Saddam, Al-Qaeda, Saddam. And everybody knows that's a crock of shit now. But he's still saying the same crap that everybody knows is false. And since the Democrats are too sackless to do anything, doesn't it seem like some Republicans ought to tap him on the shoulder and say, you know, dude, have you lost your mind? Have you lost your damn mind? We know why the Democrats are letting us down. Why are the Republicans letting down their country? How can you be a Republican and just watch those boys get on a plane to take off to go to Iraq and just remain silent because you want your party to do good in the next election. I don't understand that.
You're right. He has a vested interest in keeping a high number of troops in Iraq until the next guy takes over and then the next guy theoretically loses
okay.
Iraq.
Eleanor has a point. If Bush says we're going to stay the course, we're going to win this thing, and we stay on this disaster for two more years, oh, it's looking real good for whoever the Democrat might be in 2008 because Bush will stay on this disastrous course until he's forced out of it. So unless the Republicans go to the White House and say, dude, it's over, we're just going to watch the country go down the same bad road for two more years. In two more years, we're probably going to lose 3,000 more soldiers, so we'll be up to 6,000 then, if we're lucky. But when it's all over, Bush can say, hey, had we stayed the course, we would have won. But because a Democrat got in and went all weak-kneed and pulled the troops out, that's how we lost. So Bush doesn't mind throwing away an extra 3,000 lives on top of the 3,000 he's thrown away so far, as long as history doesn't say something bad about him, as long as he gets to say, I stayed the course. That's a 9-year-old thinking. That's all he wants to do. As long as I get my ice cream, I don't care if the house burns. We got a 9-year-old running the planet. Time to be scared?
Merry Christmas, I don't.